FACA stands for the Federal Advisory Committee Act, and it's a federal statute that says that when you're a federal agency and you want to consult with people that are not federal employees, that the only way to do it legally is to set up what's known as a formal federal advisory committee. And the reason the statute says that is that then under the statute, if you comply with it, that federal advisory committee, all the contacts between the agency and that committee will be on the record. They won't be secret contacts. And second, you're required to make sure that that federal advisory committee represents all sides of the issue, so all the stakeholders are at the table, essentially. And what the statute's designed to do is to prevent secret, off-the-record contacts with only one side of an issue while the federal agency is considering some kind of regulatory action. And that's exactly what EPA did here. It had at least 500, we think many, many more, contacts with activists that were against our project, and we think that violates the Federal Advisory Committee.
So the judge, H. Russell Holland, granted this preliminary injunction, which has essentially stopped the EPA for now. Tom, what is Pebble hoping for further down the road in this case?
If the court ultimately determines that the EPA violated the Federal Advisory Committee Act, then under most of the cases out there, the courts have ruled that the agency is not allowed to rely upon the work product of that Federal Advisory Committee, which we're claiming here is the Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment. So if we win this lawsuit on its merits, we think that there is a very high probability that EPA cannot use the Watershed Assessment to justify its veto against Pebble, and they'd have to go back to square one.
Tom, what happened, at least that you know of, after Holland granted this preliminary injunction?
EPA, a couple of days after the court issued its preliminary injunction, filed a motion with the court, essentially saying that they wanted the court to clarify its order because they didn't believe that what the judge really was ordering was for EPA to stop all work. They only believed that the court was ordering them to not take the next formal step in the process of vetoing us. And the judge, the very next day, issued a response to that, saying that no, he intended for them to stop all work. In other words, put every pencil down and not to do anything else on this preemptive veto until there's been a decision on our FACA case. So we think this is a very substantial victory for us and one that portends that we have a likelihood of being able to stop this veto process permanently.
As part of this case, you submitted hundreds of pages of emails Pebble has obtained, many of them between EPA and outside groups they were working with. You say these emails point to the collusion, you allege. We've posted them online. You've posted them online. You've been around government and the EPA a long time. What in those emails tells you there was something improper going on?
Well, you know, the way we ended up deciding to file this FACA case is that I took all the emails that we'd gotten, all the documents that we'd gotten in response to these Freedom of Information Act requests on a week-long vacation with me. It was a large stack of documents. And spent every afternoon reading them. I read every one of them myself, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And what I discovered was two things. First of all, I was shocked by the quantity of contacts. And we've counted over 500, and we believe we have only seen the tip of the iceberg of the documents. I believe there are going to be thousands and thousands of contacts between EPA and activists. But the second thing, the thing that shocked me even more, was the quality of the contacts. In other words, the significance of them. These activists were ghostwriting legal opinions that they were sending to EPA for EPA to use in this process. They were outlining how the watershed assessment should be done before EPA had opened up the process. They knew that petitions had been filed by some of the native groups requesting a veto long before we knew that that had happened. In fact, there's some indication that perhaps EPA was involved in encouraging that those petitions be filed. We've also found that this effort began, we thought it began around 2008. It now appears that there was some work done as early as 2002. And so we've gone back and requested documents from that date. But the significant thing to me, having been in a position in federal government, dealing with these kinds of issues on a day-to-day basis myself, in fact, supervising them, was that some folks at EPA were treating these activists as though they were a member of the EPA team. They were consulting them on every move they made. They were using them to help design both the factual, the scientific, and the legal strategies that were used. And it frankly is improper. It violates the absolute intent of the Federal Advisory Committee Act. And I think that's why we got our preliminary injunction.
Tom, it also appears the agency's inspector general is moving forward with its own investigation into EPA activities in Bristol Bay. Is this routine, or do you think this is significant also?
I've worked with IGs in my career a lot inside government in two different federal agencies and outside government in my law practice in three or four other federal agencies. And I know that inspector generals do not open investigations lightly. They want to make sure that there's something there to investigate. They've got many more requests for investigations than they've got personnel to conduct them. And I also know that they certainly don't convert a preliminary investigation into a comprehensive investigation unless they found something that justifies doing so. That takes a lot of resources to do one of these investigations, and they've now devoted those to this issue. And I fully expect that it will be a very critical report that comes out of the Inspector General. And I hope that that happens here sometime in the next 6 to 9 months.
If EPA maintains the right to veto further down the line in the 404C process,
right,
and they're showing every intent that that's what they would choose to do, whether it's now or then, isn't that an expensive gamble for Pebble to take? Why are you and your investors so intent on spending the money for an EIS if EPA is already signaling they don't want the mine?
Well, because the EIS, because the veto at that point will have to be based on the available scientific record. And instead of this piece of hogwash that they're now relying upon, interestingly, I chose that term. That's actually a term that one of the independent peer reviewers used to characterize the Bristol Bay watershed assessment. But instead of relying upon that document, the one that's not independent, that's the work product of this collusion between activists and EPA, they'll have to rely upon the environmental impact statement as their scientific record. And we think that will be independent, we think it'll be strong, and we think that it won't support a veto. And that's why we're willing to take that gamble.
What do you say to folks who tell you, clearly, we don't care how it's shut down, we just want the possibility of the mine shut down? If there's no concern about the process EPA is using, they just want the mine shut down, what do you tell them at this point?
Well, you know, I think there are two very different responses to that. The first one is one I mentioned before. The ends don't justify the means. That's a part of what the Cold War was all about. In America, due process is important. You've got to have a fair opportunity to make your case and to have independent people hear it and resolve it. And I think that's a fundamental principle of our democracy, and I think it's one that will ultimately prevail here. So that's one response. A second response is, be damn careful what you ask for, because if EPA is able to pervert a process and to avoid due process to bring about a result that you like today, tomorrow they can do it to bring about a result that you don't like. And there's going to be a request at some point by one of the village communities to expand an airfield or to build a power plant or to build a road in the Bristol Bay region, and there's going to be looming over that this unfair decision that you can't develop in Bristol Bay, and that EPA has the authority preemptively, without adequate due process, to say no. And I think that that's going to stop all development in the Bristol Bay region. I think it's going to have a negative impact on development across Alaska.
Tom, here we are at the start of 2015. Do you believe there will be a pebble mine?
Absolutely. We're going to get a permit. We're going to build this mine.
Pebble CEO Tom Collier, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.